Hello, welcome to F1, slick as ever. I'm your ranking, and we're going to discuss the Spanish Grand Prix, which occurred today and was fantastic. Easily the best race I've seen in the last 20 years, I would have said, in F1. Very, very exciting, very, very thrilling, lots of overtaking, and lots of drama, love. Oh, I'm telling you, tons of drama. Joining me, I've got a fantastic panel. We have a wonderful, as ever, Steve Naber from the London Mat User Group. How you doing, mate?
Great, Ewan, how are you?
I'm good, I'm okay. I've been watching a Jenson Button workout video. I'm feeling a little drowsy.
A Jenson Button workout video.
Well, I mean, God, is that for the ladies? Watching relaxation tapes.
Really?
He's been slipping off for massages or something like that, and he's left him all lethargic. He's just going, oh, well, you know.
He does look older. Very good, really, but I thought he looked really old today when he was interviewed.
He looked well out of it. Absolutely well out of it. He didn't look like he was part of this weekend at all, but there we go.
I think he was resigned to the fact yesterday that he was going to have a rough weekend.
Yeah, what's the point? Might as well go home and play Xbox. That's Sarah Gray joining us from Essex.
Hello.
Did you enjoy your Grand Prix?
Yes, I did. Excellent. I don't think it was quite as good as you said. I think there was a certain Grand Prix last year that was probably...
Well, you don't like Monaco, so what do you know?
Well, no, I can't stand Monaco.
Well, there you go. So we'll be doing the show without you in a couple of weeks then.
No, I don't think so.
Tone is joining us as well, Mr. Blunt. He's there with the all the hot news from qualifying, but only knows the result from the Grand Prix so far. But you've got plenty to learn tonight, mate. Don't worry. It was a fantastic thing. And even though you know the result, it still won't spoil it, I promise you. Some real twists and turns and ups and downs. Good week? 3 weeks?
Yeah.
We should have done one of these, shouldn't we, after the practice session the other week? Mm-hmm. That would have been a much better thing. And last but by no means least, Christopher W. How's it going, mate? Mr. Woods?
So you're too kind. I'm not bad. I'm ready and raring to talk about today's events.
Well, the Spanish Grand Prix, there we go. It was a weekend of drama. It was all on, love. It was all off, love. We got Webber sitting in the pits thinking, nah, stuff it, I ain't going to do another lap, and then ending up right the way down the grid. Button out of the top 10 shootout for Q3, which was a real surprise. Maldonado was right up there at the top and eventually got pole, of course, because thanks to Mr. Hamilton, he managed to squeeze his time forwards ahead of his and took pole through to the very end today and won, of course. Sorry if I've spoilt that for anyone, but you shouldn't be worried if you do. Hamilton,
there you go, Tone. It'll save you a few hours.
Sorry again?
That'll save Tone a few hours. Doesn't have to watch anything
it
now.
Still sound like it was worth watching the whole thing and the aftermath.
Absolutely worth it.
I reckon we can make up some mad result and try and convince Tone that that actually happened.
And finally, Alonso's got some sunglasses that I want. There we go. The week. Right, where should we start? The Hamilton thing, I would have thought. No?
Gotta be, innit?
Gotta be. So Hamilton goes out and does a qualifying lap in Q3, then comes back into the garage, and they have a little tweak around, and he goes back out, and he puts an absolute humdinger, and he said he was possessed, and the car was possessed, it was Christine, and he flew round. Unfortunately, he flew round not enough fuel. They pumped it out instead of putting it in, and the FIA gave him a disqualification from a Q3 timing, so he ended up on the back of the grid for not having a qualifying time. Just or unjust, I suppose, is the start point.
Anyone? I think he deserved a penalty, but I think effectively disqualifying him was a bit harsh. Mm. I mean, he should have just deleted the time.
Yeah, I thought it would just be a Q3 time he'd lose, if anything.
So you'd have thought he'd have just been put back on the grid for Q2?
Yeah, so back to, or take the time from, obviously he did have two runs in that session, so he had a legal lap. But, obviously if they're deleting times, I would have thought it was just Q3, not entire qualifying.
Yeah, I mean, the rule only came in from his previous event doing this at the Canadian Grand Prix, didn't it? It was rule was specifically written to stop cars from staying out on the track without enough fuel and then having to be pushed back in to be measured.
Because they don't want everyone doing it at every single race. I mean, it's not something anyone had really done before in any great numbers. And the FIA obviously didn't want it. You know, people doing it every weekend. So there's a reason for the rule there. But I don't know about the penalty.
What does the rule book say? The rule book says disqualification from practice.
They have to have a liter of fuel when they're checked.
Yeah, and back under their own power.
Yeah.
I saw an interview with the McLaren boss, and he was saying that they actually had 1.3 litres of fuel when they tested it.
Yeah, but that still wouldn't have been enough to get back from where he stopped, apparently. And give
why didn't 2 litres for an outward lap?
Yeah. Why did so they just crash it?
I mean, I saw Whitmarsh on one interview, he was trying to make up an excuse, oh yeah, there's a fault with the car. So that, you know, when they later find out, oh yeah, it's out of fuel, you know, what was Whitmarsh talking about? You know, just trying to cover up.
They said that they were open and honest with the FIA officials, and they did say to them, you know, the reason we stopped the car was because we knew we wouldn't have enough for a sample, therefore we want to make sure we had the sample for you. I guess if you didn't have a sample at all, that may have been disqualification completely.
Yeah, it would have been the same.
This was a lesser penalty.
Would he have even been allowed to race under that case, you know, if they haven't been able to give anything at all? You know, I don't know whether there's a separate rule for that if they can't give the sample.
The rule is quite specific on this, and to be honest, I'm glad he got the penalty he did. It's unfortunate it was him, but I'm glad that the punishment was meted out. The rule is competitors must ensure that a 1 litre sample must be taken from the car at any time during the event. We know this. And then McLaren argued that it was force majeure. It was human error, which isn't force majeure. Force majeure would be an earthquake, blew up the fuel bowser, and we couldn't put more fuel in. They made a mistake. They tried to explain it away as force majeure. It says, except in cases of force majeure, if a sample of fuel is required, the car must have already been driven back to the pits under its own power. We know it uses about 3 litres of fuel for a lap. They didn't have enough fuel.
No, I agree, Chris. I think it was right that they should have been, that Hamilton should have been punished. But I think the deletion of that time would have been the right thing to do.
Well, the rule's the rule, though, isn't it, Sarah? That's the point. Yeah. It's an on or an off. It's not a how bad is it? And then there's the subjectiveness. I mean, there was a good point from Brundle today on the F1 coverage from Sky, saying, well, okay, let's say that one of the wings is tweaked illegally. Are you going to have to sit down and try and figure out what that would have taken off a lap, or whether it was actually there in the previous lap and wasn't in this lap, and that kind of stuff? You know, the rule is the rule, and that's the end of it. It's there to satisfy everyone, and everyone has to comply.
People were trying to do that, weren't they? They were trying to work out what that extra sort of fuel that he didn't have would have been worth in the lap. I mean, I've got no problem believing he could have taken pole, you know, and had enough fuel.
It was half a second faster.
They said on the F1 coverage today for Sky that it made no difference at all. He would still have qualified well ahead of everyone else.
Exactly.
And there was a good point from Whitmarsh in his interview with Sky, because he said the thing that people have got to realise is that it's very difficult to tell how much fuel is in a cell. Because if you know, everyone's got this concept in their head that there's a cap on the top that you screw open, you look in and you push the tank around and it wobbles and you can see where the fuel is.
It's just a rubber bag, effectively, isn't it?
Yeah, and he's saying it's physically impossible to do that, because we've got to build a tank that can stand 4.5 Gs of lateral force and still deliver fuel to the engine. So it's not possible to just rely on gravity to deliver it out of the bottom of a sump. This thing is a cell in itself, and there's nothing to see. So it's difficult to gauge what is in it and what's not in it at any point in the race.
They would know how much they've pumped into it in the first place.
So if there was a leak, though, what he was saying is we wouldn't be able to tell there was a leak. It would be impossible, because we have no gauge. There's no... Right. And I thought that was a good point to make.
I've got 2 points on this. In hindsight, Hamilton should have just span it into the gravel track, and then he would have been taken back to the pits, and his lap would have stood.
Yeah, he was just told over the radio to stop, wasn't he?
But they would have still measured the fuel. The point I made to Tone yesterday on Twitter was: no matter what he did, they would have just pumped out the fuel and measured whether there was enough or not. And unless they could offer another reason why the car had to stop, it wouldn't have worked. So they'd have known he'd have done it deliberately at that point, I think. And it could have been worse.
Yes, good point.
And your other point, Steve?
When you compare it next to Schumacher's penalty, I know we haven't got to the race yet, but Schumacher had a penalty. What was it, Sarah, that's been applied to him post-race?
It was five-place grid penalty.
Right, so it's a five. So he was dangerous driving. So he was dangerous driving to cause an accident, and that's just a five place penalty compared to not having enough fuel, which is not dangerous driving, and yet you put somebody at the back of the grid for running out of fuel. Seems a little bit hard.
It's still an unfair advantage, though, really. You could argue that.
It's not dangerous.
I agree. I think that's a really good point. You know, stopping the car on the track would be dangerous, I suppose, if it wasn't the fact there was no one out there after the, you know, you're only going to have a maximum of 10 cars out there, and there wasn't. They were all in apart from him. It wasn't a dangerous situation. What Schumacher did was very dangerous, and he's only got 5 points, or five penalty points, the penalty stages on the grid. Mm. That is a good point for comparison of you know, whether the punishment fits the crime, etc.
It was one of those things, though, where they had to put their foot down and stop this from becoming prevalent, because we know that teams will bend the rules any way possible. We already see that they stop on track in order to be able to give a minimum 1 litre sample after the race finishes. I would prefer that they overfueled and had enough fuel in hand to be able to drive back to the pits, because it kind of spoils it with you get two or three cars stopping. And the point was made, I think, by Brundle, that you'll get 7, 8, 9, 10 cars all stopping out on track because they haven't got enough fuel.
Yeah,
it does seem a bit odd that they would apply it for quali, but not for the race.
I'm hoping they'll extend it to the
rule
race
just
as well
applied
for
to the qualifying regulations, though, or was it also applied to the post-race procedure? Because that was never really clear, because obviously the original incident happened in qualifying as well. And, you know, it had a direct effect on the race, you know, the grid for the race.
Well, so what you're saying, Chris, is you want to see it applied for the race situation, and if you can't get the car back under its own power and deliver a 1 litre sample, you could be disqualified from the race full stop. Your standing would disappear.
Yeah.
I like that. I got to say, I think I agree with it.
Taking your point, though, in terms of it spoils the race, it spoils qualifying, that's what Vettel basically spoiled qualifying for me, because on the Q3, he just went out, poodled around, and that was it, really, at the start.
But you hate Vettel.
He didn't even set a time.
I mean, that's a whole... I mean, that's a whole other issue with Q3, isn't it? Where, you know, somebody was bringing that up with me on Twitter, and I did agree with them. Yeah, they should be forced to go out in Q3 and set a proper time rather than having some of them just sit there. I completely agree with that, but
that's not really.
Yeah.
You guys just, I mean, it's the thing that gets me is that. You know, there's like a bias that goes through a few of you, and you're a Hamilton hater, Tone. And yeah, Steve, I've got to say, mate, year, Jensen Button could be trying to date your wife. You'd still hate him less than Vettel. It's true.
Could you hear me in Birmingham laughing like the madman when Vettel had that drive-through penalty? I stood up and saluted
him. It doesn't surprise me. You've just got this thing about Vettel. You can't let it go, dude.
Yeah.
Oh, finger.
It'll eat you alive from the inside out.
At least my Hamilton thing, I've let it only come out when he's actually done something or the team's actually done something. Yeah, I've actually enjoyed racing.
Tweets, dude. It's like Hamilton smiled at the bloody camera, and it's usually worse than bloody as well, mate. You can't put Hamilton. There's people that follow you on Twitter that think his name is effing Hamilton.
Yeah, not Lewis Hamilton.
Not Lewis, yeah. Right, so Hamilton got done. Webber sat in the garage. What the hell was that all about?
I've got a good story about Webber.
Oh, go on then.
There's a picture, Joe, that I sent over for anyone watching. One of the Lotus drivers... has a girlfriend that works for, I think, Sky TV. If you remind me what the Lotus drivers are called, I'll tell you which one.
Kovalainen and...
Kovalainen.
I'm trying to remember.
His girlfriend was working for one of the Sky TV channels in Holland or somewhere in Europe, and was speaking to Webber following qualifying. And she said, Mark, are you worried about the Lotuses? Because they are quick this weekend. And do you see them as a competition? And Webber just said, yeah, and I'm just on you to wear him out tonight so that he's no competition tomorrow. And she just completely blushed and went all red. But if you see a picture of her, I think you can understand his comment. He's a cheeky monkey, isn't he? Sorry? Grosjean, sorry. Yeah, it's Grosjean with his missus. But yeah, I think Webber was a bit annoyed after sitting in the pits, wasn't he, with his when they told him that he would be safe for Q3.
Race strategy, Mark. I'm going to try and put a lap in, then I'm going to sit in the pits when I should have gone out, and I'm just going to hope that Grosjean's girlfriend shags him senseless. I mean, it's not a ritual race strategy.
It didn't work at all, though. How well Grosjean did.
Maybe that was the point. She went back home. She said, do you know what Webber's just said to me? She said, I'm not going to do anything with you tonight, but if you come home tomorrow night, mate, and you've beaten him,
there's incentive for you.
Exactly. forget podium spots and mum champagne, mate. There'll be more waiting for you. Button, out of sorts, out of the top 10. Just not in it this weekend. Yeah. I mean, his head looked like it was about to explode. He just wasn't. So unhappy yesterday. And today.
Even in the practice sessions, he was like, he was trying to develop the car, wasn't he? Because it was like, you know, oh, we've got too much oversteer. And then I think one of his comments that was broadcast out on the radio was, oh, now we've got understeer. We only changed that one thing. Work that out. That was actually one of his comments over the radio to the pits.
Jenks has made a comment in the chat room. Yes, of course you must be right, because F1 drivers are worried about being able to pull girls. Good point.
Don't think they have to try too hard.
No. They are a brute advert, absolutely. Button he's just not happy, is he, at all? He started off so beautifully this year.
He'll be fine. He's just had a bad day at the office.
They're all starting off on women that are, forget it, girlfriends, driver's girlfriends now in the chat room. It's just gone ballistic. Anyone want to make any comments about Button? I mean, all you Buttonites out there, do you want to?
Well, what, in the quali or in the race?
Well, either. I mean, I just thought he was kind of making up the numbers this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking on Saturday, why is it that Hamilton's car is obviously hooked up and he's just flying, and yet Button's got the same car and he's struggling with it? And I can only think it's they were just playing with the settings and they just didn't manage to find anything that worked for gents for this weekend.
That, I think that the seams applied a lot the, of new the team that was going through to the vans this weekend,
well.
Didn't they?
Well, hang on, one at a time. Oh. Steve starts off. Oh.
I think this weekend was quite a key weekend for them, being in Europe, and a lot of teams were putting new bits of kit onto the car through the weekend, and I think they were probably just putting too much new bits of kit that weren't completely finished onto Button's car, which probably didn't help. But yeah, he did have a poor weekend. But then again, he came in, was it 8th, 9th? Which is only 8th. So it was only really a few places behind Vettel, who's... that's where the competition is, isn't it? Between Vettel, Hamilton, Button, Alonso. So it was a reasonable weekend for him.
Not and a couple of places but. Behind Hamilton.
He was right behind Lewis.
Who started on the 24th place on the grid.
I love the comments that Lewis made, and I wasn't surprised. That I was thinking, okay, Lewis wasn't happy about the fact that he got stuck to the back of the grid. But I, having seen him, remembering from karting days, he used to love doing that, carving his way through the field. And he made a made a reference to that in an interview afterwards, saying about it just felt like karting days as well. Because when they used to race with karts, the way it used to work is there used to be two heats. And they used to draw lots for the grid. And then the second heat would be the grid reversed. So you would never be on pole. You'd always be opposite ends of the grid if you came out the draw first or last. So, you know, he was very good at it then. So I bet I'm sure he's loving this.
Oh, yeah, he relished the idea, I'm sure. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Tom, what was your point about the Button?
He just seemed to be chasing setup all through the practice sessions. You know, and that did carry on, sounded like that carried on into qualifying, and then onto the race. You know, obviously you can't change much after qualifying, but you know, he just seemed to be chasing setup. He never seemed happy, did he, with the car?
I mean, there's a great phrase in golf for pros, which is, you know, when you go out on the practice range, you're practicing for next week, but you're playing for this week. And that was exactly what, you know, you shouldn't be practicing while you're out on the golf course. You shouldn't be practicing at the weekend for that weekend, because you're never going to get anywhere if you do that. You start tweaking around. You just, whatever the setup is, you just say, all right, I'm going to live with this and I'm going to burn through it. And eventually you'll get used to it as you're running, I would have thought.
I think JB struggled as well because the car doesn't suit his driving style, and also combined with that, he then has trouble keeping the tyres in the optimum range. When he was driving the Brawn, the car was much more downforcier, technical term, and as a result, he could keep the tyres in the optimum operational range. Well, we know that tyres this year have a much narrower band of operation, so immediately the slidier, slippier driving style, which the McLaren seems to give at the moment, favours Lewis Hamilton, because he's always kicking the back out and doesn't mind if it drifts around, but Jensen likes it to be glued to the floor because of his smooth driving style. So he's just suffering at the moment because the car favours Lewis, and Lewis just goes hell for leather anyway, doesn't he? I mean, so what?
So yeah, Chris, are you saying it's been that way since the start of the season, despite the fact that he's won at Melbourne? You're saying that that's possibly been the way it's been since the start of the season. He's not that comfortable.
I think they're still working at it, aren't they, and trying to make it work. Yeah. And
it seems to be the way it's developed and evolved. Yeah.
I think that's the way they are, though. They're two completely different drivers, got two completely different styles.
Yeah,
it's not just this season. As Chris says, those tyres have got a much narrower window before they go off. And they're saying about the 2.5 millimetres of tread when they first start being used, before they start to disappear and they start to go away. And that's why they're burning through so many sets of tyres at the moment.
Well, they're saying there's an optimum range from 5 to 15 laps, and then after 15 laps you're dicing with death a bit, and they reckon that there's a cliff face at 20 where the performance just drops right off. You're knackered. Even wasting 20 seconds in the pits changing them over is far better than the times that you're going to lose out on the track. And there was a point today in the race that Lewis had got to a certain stage. He was performing really, really well, and then you could see that people were getting up to him and passing him. Vettel passed him towards the end there very easily because of the fact the tyres were going off.
I think Jensen has the same problem that Michael Schumacher has, except that Jensen doesn't cry like a little girly man.
What I want to know is how...
To an extent, he kind of is, but, you know...
What I want to know is how Schumacher knows there's an issue with the tyres, because he doesn't seem to have driven for long enough to have tested them this year.
No, there is that.
My tyre's not working, it has gravel in it.
We had a lot of problems with the car.
That's because
I know he doesn't sound anything like Schwarzenegger, I do apologise. The race then. Maldonado wins on pole, and then he comes out and... they all start off. Perez gets a puncture on lap one and then comes in, but he ends up going off anyway a few hours later. What about the start? Because, I mean, traditionally we've talked about there being an issue with turn one sometimes for a lot of the circuits. You'd have thought with a 700-metre run into the first turn, this was potentially one of those, but it actually turned out rather smooth. Maldonado decided to suddenly attack Alonso and push him in towards the wall, but was that a bad move?
No, it's great.
Yeah.
I thought you should have just started, because he was clearly tipping the nod there to him. I thought he should have just put his foot down and gone with it.
I thought he did.
I think he played it very sensibly. I mean, he was holding him off for a while, and it was really took till the second corner before Alonso actually was clearly past him. So Maldonado was giving it everything he could to hang on to him. But I thought, all you know, right from the start, as soon as I knew that Hamilton got kick to the back, that Alonso was always going to be up for this, because it's his home race, and I think that probably gave him a few extra yards. So I wasn't surprised that he was leading at the end of the second corner.
I just found the idea of Maldonado not holding the line straight and then, you know, holding the position into the first turn, because he would have been in a better position in the first turn for diving in. I would have thought the drag race would have been, right, let's just go head to head, off we go, rather than me tracking over, using up extra track, using up extra distance. And clearly I thought that the action of the car clearly demonstrated that he was intimidated a bit by Alonso.
Yeah, Alonso's home Grand Prix, that's hardly surprising.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, these guys aren't quite the same. And this isn't his first outing with a set of L plates on, is it?
No, I know. But I think yes, I mean, you've got Alonso in a situation where you haven't got any of his main rivals until you get to seventh on the grid. Alonso was really up for this. He thought he was going to score a hatful of points over his rivals. And as soon as Hamilton was out of it, I bet he thought, right, that's it. This is mine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. So the first few laps, in the first sort of 10 laps, nothing really seemed to go out of place, did it? I mean, Hamilton flew. He got four places in the first sort of 200 metres of the grid. Webber made a pit stop on seven laps in, saying that it was degradation. Alonso was also talking about there being degradation on the tyres that early. But they seem to be stopping in the first 5 to 10 laps as a norm now anyway, don't they? Because of the fact they've got the quali tyres on.
They were all jumping to the hard tyres because I think they saw Webber come in early and the times he was setting, and I think that's why they all started to pile into the pits relatively early, because normally you expect it sort of in the early teens that they come in and change off their quali tyres. But I think they'd seen Webber go for an early pit stop and go onto the hard tyres and start to set some good times, and I think that's why they all jumped into the pits.
Wasn't there a point in the practice session where they were, they were trying times on hard tyres and they're actually somehow ending up faster than with the soft tyres? Or was that just one practice session that was isolated to?
Well, didn't Maldonado use hards all the way through? Apart from the one change, the regulation change.
They did seem to use a lot more generally. The drivers were using a lot more hard tyres than soft tyres. Mm. There was a few odd ones where, like Button on lap 25 went to soft tyres and a couple of others. But generally, they'd all started on soft, so they could use hard for the rest of the race if they wanted to. And obviously that was because of they were talking about possibly four stops. Obviously they want to get the best performance out of that car. I'm not surprised, especially like Hamilton. He tried a two stopper and it didn't work, but I don't blame him for trying it. But he was always going to then have to be on the hard tyres to do that, have any chance of doing it.
I thought it was an amazing race by Hamilton to watch him coming through the traffic, overtaking everything, not scared of overtaking, committing to the corners where he had to go for it. Yeah. I reckon this is why Tony's not watched a race, because he doesn't want to watch a race where Hamilton's doing well.
Yeah, I mean, he was up to 13th. He was up to 13th by lap 8.
Amazing. From last place. Yeah, really, really good race.
Says the Vettel hater.
Yeah, we've seen people come from the back already this year, though, haven't we? We've seen other people do it, so we know it's possible.
That's right, yeah.
Up into, points-paying positions as well.
To Steve, Vettel is Voldemort.
I think seriously though, Hamilton. I don't think he really thought he had a chance of winning, but it was a case of just how many points he could grab, really, wasn't it?
But it's quite nice in that situation because you can't lose, can you?
You've got nothing to lose.
All you can do is just go for it.
Absolutely,
and that's what he did.
So we're into the second 10 laps, and Alonso pits, Schumacher pits with a 3.6 second stop. And then only two laps later managed to shove it in the back of Senna like an old boy at the lights. He's got a penalty. What was now we all know he's got the penalty. It's going to be easy to kind of issue a judgment in hindsight. But what was your feeling before you knew he got a penalty for what happened? Did you see it was his fault, or did you see it as Senna's fault?
My favourite bit was when he... Sorry.
Go on.
My favourite bit was when he was trying to convince... the BBC that it was completely not his fault at all. He came on and said he must have braked in front of me. He turned this way, he turned that way. He just had it in for me, and he was awful. And he went out of his way to crash into me.
I've got a theory when it comes to Shuey and these incidents. I can always tell when he really believes what he's saying and not, because when he knows he's in the right, you can see that you can hear the passion in his voice, and he did not have any passion in his voice. He knew he was wrong, but he just wasn't going to admit it, obviously.
Well, he threw his steering wheel like he was passionate.
I don't think he did.
Yeah. So this wasn't like when he was defending him, you know, his incident with Barrichello, you know, where Barrichello was saying, oh, he shoved me off the track.
No.
No.
This wasn't like he, that, you know, because he was passionate there, wasn't he?
Imagine you've got a person sending a text whilst they're approaching a set of lights in the high street and the car in front has stopped. And that's kind of what it was like.
That is perfect. That describes it absolutely perfectly.
Well, there we go. Maybe Shuey was texting. Maybe they're trying a new in-car communication system at the...
radio failed, so we've got this backup. Yeah.
They've got a texting system. You've called it. You haven't even seen the race, mate. You've called it. You're brilliant.
It should be a hood on his visor.
It was so like that because coming down that straight, they were so far apart, and then they were getting closer, and he was so obviously caught off track by the fact of the way of where Senna decided to brake for that first corner, and he just wasn't looking, and he just straight back, take him out, just like that.
Was there anyone that looked at that incident and thought Senna might be the one at fault?
No, he didn't weave. You know, he was. He had a straight line all the way down. He had no reason to try and weave. He wasn't trying. Wasn't working to try and keep Schumacher behind him or anything.
Anyone? No one? Everyone's
Schumacher.
Convinced
well, it. Schumacher went to the left of Senna, approaching
and
the
Senna
corner.
Senna did move. Yes,
he dinked to the left. Senna kind of stayed in the middle, but then Schumacher went to go to the right to undercut, but just misjudged the approach speed.
Yeah,
and I'm just watching a replay from the BBC site as I say this, and. I'm not sure if Schumacher approached with his DRS open or not, but he was just miles fast. And we know that Senna was slow because his tyres were struggling and he was just going slower anyway. But in the rules, and this was said in the Sky commentary, in the rules, the car in front controls the pace. So you've got to be on your toes.
That's right.
It's just Schumacher's fault. He just, you know, for one
always stopping the distance for which you can see to be clear.
Okay. You know,
highway code.
As a driving instructor once told me, tyres and tarmac. If you can't see the tarmac, you're too close.
Exactly right. Jenks in the chat room, imagine you're on 50 million euros a year to pay attention to what the bloody hell you're doing. I've had to change one of those words. And you get caught sleeping and wreck a multi-hundred million dollar car, a euro car. Whoops. If you can't adapt to what's going on in front of you, you don't belong on the track. You don't think for a minute he deliberately hit him, but there's no way he should have.
No, I don't think he did it deliberately.
I don't think
there's any malice in it at all. I think it was just he wasn't concentrating.
Just crap. Lap 19. Jensen gets a radio message. Jensen, we are running to plan B. Plan B. What the hell was plan B? Was it B as in bromine for his tea or something like that, just to try and perk him up a bit? Or
that was the cunning plan, obviously.
It's a Baldrick cup of coffee. Watch out for the chocolate sprinkles. Now, Jensen, I didn't get what that was all about. And then Alonso laps Carter Kane 20 laps in. I'm just as a question here, open question. Is there a point that something's got to be done about lapping now? So if you're lapped, you're out. And you're stuck at the grid. You're stuck at the places from the back from if you get lapped.
That'd be awful.
So you know
the excitement of coming up to a traffic. The traffic at the end of the race is normally quite an interesting kind of catalyst to a bit of fun.
Remember, we've got that rule with the safety car that back markers are allowed. Cars that have been lapped are allowed to unlap themselves.
Which I think's wrong. I looked at that today, and I looked at Carter Kane driving, and I was like, you are kidding. You are 20 laps into a 66-lap race, and you've already been lapped. You have no place being on. It's like me trying to play in the British Open and shooting a 90 on the first round and them saying I should still make the cut.
I'll tell you what was really interesting.
Just not good enough.
I can see your point. And the bit that really illustrate that today with the back two teams, I don't know if you saw Hamilton's start. They showed it a bit later on, but you could see he got past the four cars in front of him, which were HRT and Marussia, I think, and there was a huge gap This is before the first corner.
No, this is before the start line. He'd done three of those four before the start line.
Yeah, I know, but what I was getting, not so much where he was, but you could see already that there was a huge gap before the first corner between those four cars and the Caterhams. And that just shows a huge performance difference between those two teams and the rest of the field. In the sake of a few hundred yards, you've got that. Okay, it was only a couple of car lengths, but that's,
I know they're kind of our team, Marussia, but that, you know, we root for them because of the association with UK2, but at least they're not being lapped until much, much later in the race.
Mm.
I mean, this guy's lapped on lap 20. If you're lapped that early, you have no place being on that circuit. I'm sorry, I can't see the benefit of that at all. Feasibly, you're going to be lapped three times in the race.
So what happens if you're involved in an incident on the first corner? You're, say, Weber, for instance, and you go to the back of the field and you end up being lapped on lap 10 because of the fact that you're so far behind. Does that mean you're out of the race?
But that's not on his main pace, though, whereas with, you know, Karpikainen, it sounds like it was on his maximum pace and he's still being lapped this early, whereas... You know, if someone else was sent to the back, you know, someone who's usually a front-end driver, you know, they'd be able to keep the pace up to at least try and catch up.
Well, I think there's a good point from Sarah there about the objectivity of the rule then, and you can't suddenly start saying, well, you're normally pretty good, so we'll let you stay in this week, but you're always crap, so off you go. Because then there's no improvement.
The whole thing about,
I think it's the rule's the rule. If you get lapped, you get lapped. Oh. And if you get lapped because you stuffed it into the wall and you managed to push it back out again, it doesn't matter, you still get, you're lapped is lapped.
However, I do think that the 107% qualifying rule is a good one because that does stop really slow cars from getting into the race and causing a problem.
What you could do, rather than kick them out when they're lapped, is that they have open DRS all the time once they're lapped.
That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Well, that wouldn't help on the corners, though, would it?
Well, they could know. They can...
Well, as soon as he's been lapped, he could be a second behind the car that's lapped him and get it that way.
Or they could have a oil slick that comes out the back of the car when they press the other button.
Yeah, like James Bond.
Ball bearing dispensers.
Wacky F1.
The problem with HRT is they've had no strong foundations since their inception. So they kept on getting bought out and they almost collapsed in 2009 before they even made it to the grid. And then they had a buyout, so they became HRT from Campos. And now they're Hispania because it was another buyout. People left the team. They've just had no basis upon which they can build a decent car. So they just struggle from fundamental lack of development. They're probably where they should have been now. They're probably where they should have been 7 months ago. And in the practice, you could see that the car just has no downforce. It's really struggling. Yeah. So they need to get some new funding from somewhere and just get some guys in who can design a new car.
So how about having a rule that sets out a plan, say, over 5 years for each new team, which says that you must be getting within a certain percentage of the top cars each year, getting closer and closer to that. Otherwise, you're not allowed to compete.
The only thing you could say about it is the cost of the sport, though, Sarah, because to get to that kind of 11th hour and then be told no, you're talking about people's jobs and lives and an awful lot of money going down the pan then.
Yeah, but they're doing that with the 107% qualifying rule anyway.
Yeah, but that's a weekly thing, not a seasonal thing, isn't it? Are you talking about a seasonal thing or a week-on-week thing?
I'm talking about, you know, I'm just thinking if you're going to have, I mean, I don't agree with it, but I think if you're going to have a rule like this, you say you sit down with the FIA and you agree, a percentage that you have to be within the top car or the top five cars or something, top six cars or something like that. And okay, it's not going to be fantastic, but you agree that percentage so that, and it has to be progressing every year. If it doesn't get, they don't get closer, then that's it.
Mm. Good point.
Wasn't Karpikainen allowed into this race, even though again he hadn't, you know, qualified within 107% because of his practice times? You know, that's why he was allowed in on purely on that basis again. You know, so that
the only thing I would say. Go on, Tony.
I'm not sure, you know, that they should, you know, count the practice times if this is how they end up in the race, you know, because this has been, you know, it's been a fairly, obviously, I don't think it's been this bad before, but it's been a fairly regular occurrence that, you know, they're getting lapped, you know, stupidly early, really.
Mm.
I don't think these teams need any anyone to pick on them at all. Because just looking at the, going back to my favourite topic, the drivers at the top, they got nice girlfriends. HRT, they got bitter munters as their girlfriends, and that's all the punishment they need. Look at them.
Steve.
Sorry.
That's disgraceful.
My view is that the spirit of the sport for me was in the 70s when you had lots of small teams like this developing. And I think if you take away the small teams, it takes away that element of it, and it all becomes corporate big teams, and it takes the fun out of it. I would, you know, I'd probably lose a lot of interest in it.
But the problem is that races and world championships could be decided by people who aren't good enough to be there.
2008 is a classic example of that.
Yep. That's the one that springs to mind, yeah.
Right then, Vettel gets a drive-through penalty that's issued on lap 28, and so does Massa for not slowing down, not lifting off under a yellow flag. I thought that was a bit out of order.
Spot on.
Really?
He's a Vettel hater. What else is he going to say?
I thought you were saying it wasn't right, and I thought Steve was saying agreeing with him.
No, Steve's disagreeing with me.
It was key as well, because at that point I think Vettel was in 8th or 7th, and Hamilton and Lewis were kind of biting his heels. So for him to get that penalty and then go behind them, because that's where the real race was, really, because that's where the title holders are. It was a big blow to him. He recovered. Yeah, he did a really good job and came back from it, but... And that's what the rules are there for, aren't they? If you're overtaking or speeding up in a yellow.
He didn't overtake him and Massa. They'd come out of the DRS zone to the yellow flags and then were in the DRS zone, out of the DRS zone and into the yellow zone before they closed their DRS. So they were accused, or they were convicted of, not lifting off. That was it. They should have approached a yellow car zone with more caution. And the thing was, there was debris on the thing, but some of that debris had nearly hit Vettel in the visor. He kind of knew it was there.
That was pretty scary, wasn't it? Did you see that?
That one that flew past the right-hand side.
The carnage from, was it Schumacher and Senna's incident, wasn't it?
But I thought that was a little bit harsh to convict them both for not slowing down.
This sounds like something, remember Hakkinen used to do this in sort of 98-99? If they ever had a yellow sector, like, he'd be waving at the stewards as he went through to try and show them that he was backing off. And really, he wasn't at all. He was just keeping up the same pace. It wasn't just Hakkinen. A lot of drivers used to do it, but he was always the most obvious about it, I suppose. Just
raise the hand, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't illegal then, Tony.
I've seen you, that's all right, yeah.
It wasn't illegal then, that's the thing.
Yeah, that's true. There's a different set of rules, obviously, but...
So, we jump on ahead then. Double take from Hammy on the Toro Rossos. I got to say, lap 40, that move, I mean, effectively, it was one corner, wasn't it, from what Brundle had said, and it was right, you know, it was the inwards out of one part of the race and the outwards of the next corner. He took both of them in one go. I thought that was superb. Magic moment for me, I think.
Yeah. Was a good move.
Very good. Perez mechanically fails, and then Maldonado misses the DRS by a hundredth of a second, and Alonso then ends up going into the pits. 3.5 second stop for Alonso. Very good. Very, very good. Fastest pit stop of the afternoon.
Mm.
And then it's that sort of last 10 laps then, he's all about the tyres, and it's all about who's going to make it last. And you've got Maldonado, Alonso, and Raikkonen, and that was the season, I guess. That's the best 10 laps of the season so far.
It was great, because even though they were quite a way apart, any one of the three of them could have won the race at that point. Because if Maldonado and Alonso's tyres had fallen off a cliff and Raikkonen was the last one to stop out of the three, he could have easily passed them.
Mm.
I thought Alonso was going to win this. I was absolutely convinced on the...
I was too.
I had Kimi down as winner, actually. It seemed to be the popular choice, but I actually agreed with it. There was a lot of point to that, but it sounded like it was in the fight anyway.
Well, I think the point that decided that Alonso was not going to win it was on lap 47 when Maldonado took Raikkonen. And if he hadn't taken Raikkonen and going into turn one there, then I think Alonso would have done him.
He didn't get a message that said, we need this position or anything, did he?
Yeah, because Alonso only got past him on the next lap, so he obviously wasn't too far behind at that point.
He did get the message, drive as slow as you can, quickly or something silly.
Slow as you can to win the race.
Save the tyres.
Yeah.
Absolutely. and then it all came down at the end, and Kobayashi took Rosberg and went up to fifth, and then with another 100 metres, they reckon that that Hamilton would have taken Rosberg and gone up as well into seventh, which he possibly would have done. But at the end, Raikkonen came in third, and that was the end of it. I want to know, do you think Raikkonen's got Botox? Because that bloke, he must be having Botox, because he hasn't cracked his face all year.
You mean just to take away any personality at all that he ever shows
his face? Exactly. He just has that little bit of Botox. I don't want anyone to know that I'm smiling.
Did you, I don't know if you saw the interview with Grosjean afterwards, and also I can't remember his surname, the team principal at Lotus. Ooh, yeah. And they on the BBC, and they were both asking that, they were both asked by Jake, Eddie, and DC whether they've ever seen Kimi smile. And Grosjean said, yeah, I've seen him smile. And he said, can you get him to come and smile with us?
So here's the thing. I did a Google search for a picture of Raikkonen smiling. Yeah, that was the thing. Raikkonen smiling. That was the Google search term. Joe's got a picture of Raikkonen here smiling. That came back on a Google search for Raikkonen smiling. And it's horrific.
I mean, that's not a smile.
That is in the top 10 returns within Google for Raikkonen smiling. Absolutely. Stone cold, promise you. Hand on heart.
It doesn't need Botox, it's just natural ice there.
But there you go. I mean, the guy is on Botox, there's no question of it, just to stop any kind of hint of emotion showing through. You want about be awesome Schumacher at being ice cold in the 80s, or the 90s rather. Rubbish. This guy's he's an iceberg.
Yeah, he is.
He's
just
a Titanic metal iceberg.
He loves racing. He hates the media. He hates PR and that sort of stuff. All he wants to do is race.
There we go. The Spanish Grand Prix. Magic moments then. Start us off, Steve.
It was Schumacher having his little tiff as he was getting out of the car. I quite liked him kind of swinging his handbag around and throwing his wheel around. That was quite good to see. A bit of passion.
Chris has just stuck a search term in the chat room, or a research return in the chat room, for happy Kimi Raikkonen. Not one frigging smile in there.
Really? Oh, I got a bunch. Sure. But then I did turn safe search to moderate.
Oh, they're kind of like... Oh, there's one. There's one that's a cheesy, and then the rest are kind of half grins.
Even the one where he's on the podium from Ferrari, he's kind of...
But you've got to say, in the first 10 pictures, there's no smiles. Happy Kimi.
One of them isn't even him. It's Bohemia, isn't it?
Oh, is it? It's the one that's smiling is actually not even him. On the... Oh, Maldonado's on one of them as well, yeah.
Again, not smiling. He just needs a hug.
Yes. Steve, so your moment is Shoey's hissy fit.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was good handbags paces. It was, it's good.
I can't believe he thought for 1 second he was going to get away with it.
Yeah. No, it was. I love that man.
You love that man more than Vettel.
Yes.
It sounds like he was more, sort of angry at himself than if obviously, we've established it wasn't malicious in intent. But, just trying to excuse the mistake away after.
Excellent. Steve, what's your, you've done yours. Sarah, what's your magic moment?
Sorry, Tony, about this one, but mine is Hamilton weaving his way through the field. Especially in the first 10 laps, it was just beautiful to watch. I know it was the back end of the field, but it was still fun, and I know he enjoyed it.
Excellent.
It was good.
Excellent.
Watching him come through, it was a brilliant race for him. I really enjoyed it.
It was good. I you've got to say, when it was all set up, and then Whitmarsh came on an interview with Sky prior to the race, and he said, Lewis is very positive about it. He knows it's just a case of now he's got everything to play for. And when they interviewed Hamilton, he said, well, there you go, pedal to the metal. Just go out and have some fun. You've got nothing to lose, have I? And you knew it was going to be back on there straight away. Good pick. Tone, have you got a magic moment from practice?
Well, just Maldonado getting the pole in the end.
Sorry, Dick.
Yeah. Then, when he found out about it, because I think there was it was on Inside F1 on the BBC News Channel. They actually showed him the moment where he told about it, and they were at the Williams party.
That's right.
So, Tony, was it that, or was it the fact that Hamilton got dumped to the back of the field that made you happiest?
Well, no. In a way, it was a shame because I think Hamilton could have got that pole legitimately, and I can't see any reason why they did. I did see that as a bit of a shame.
Where were you when Tone said something nice about Hamilton? Right up there with when JFK was shot.
I've been doing it all. Well,
when Sarah says something good about Apple.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yes.
But what you're forgetting is that Hamilton's got a new platinum card for the stewards this year, so he's got to start getting points for it.
Well, were there only your here then?
Excellent. Chris, what's your magic moment?
All right, well, I'm not going to say the obvious thing, which is Williams back on top. Nice to see him on the part. Nice to have the British anthem played. And I like it because it's one of the shortest ones as well. But I think my favourite moment, and there were several of them, was my favourite little Japanese driver, Kamui Kobayashi, doing his ninja moves down inside the corner. It's great. And apparently there's now a phrase for it. You know when you've been KK'd.
Was that when he nailed Button? Because that was good.
It's great. Every overtake he does is epic because he's just like, Banzai! And just goes down the inside, down the outside, over the top. I don't know what it is. Up on That's two wheels, like in the transporter. It's brilliant. I love watching him drive. It's great fun.
Make a comment
it's like
about
he's, it's like he's playing on the PlayStation.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Just hanging the back out, getting the drift on. Oh, it's brilliant. I love it.
You could make a comment about
it's going to be
kamikaze.
He's coming behind another car.
What the hell, that wouldn't be fair, would it?
I always think if it any movie does, it's the Kobayashi Maru for the other driver. It's a no win situation. It's a bit of a geeky reference, but
Oh, got it.
We've lost you, and it was all just too much for him.
Yeah, I thought I heard him start talking, and then
has anyone
no, I'm still here.
Ewan is wearing the Spanish flag tonight.
Yeah,
I'm still here.
Ah.
Hello,
we're just talking about your attire tonight.
Oh, I can hear you.
Themed Spanish outfit by the look of it.
Yeah,
it's my rugby club top. There you go. Jenks in the chat room says magic moment is the F1 interview with Frank Williams post race. The joy on the man's face was immeasurable. Solid example to me of the emotion that comes from motor racing. Live and breathe it. I do agree. That was very good. Maldonado taking Raikkonen, I thought, was a great moment because it was crucial to him actually winning. Hamilton pitting too late and then got behind the rest of they kept him out longer than they should have done. That was a crucial moment as well. If not a magic one. But I think the pits crews have had a real old kicking just lately. I mean, there's been a couple of wheels have gone missing. Wheel nuts have not gone on. There's been cross threads. Left rear wheel has been a problem for a couple of cars. It hit the Lotuses this week as well as. And I thought Alonso's pit crew deserve the magic moment because they were brilliant. And then they stuffed him back out at a crucial moment with Maldonado on a 3.5-second change. And there's no question that they gave Alonso every opportunity today as well. So I think he is one for the pit crews, is my vote. Definitely. This podcast and many others would not be possible without UK2.net. They are the supporters of us, and they're all the supporters of Marussia, the F1 team. And hopefully, in a few weeks' time, we'll be going to the Marussia factory, a few interviews and things like that, because UK2 have got a tour around the new factory, and they're asking us.
Ooh. Hey,
I'll be coming back with a wheel. That I'm going to be there to the wife. We're going to use as a coffee table, which then, of course, and
so cliche.
And then I'll have tons and tons of clothing that won't fit me, and some bags. And if I do get anything at all to give away, I'll try and tap them up for some prizes for everyone. If you're an F1 follower and you listen to this show, you run the risk of, if you're in the chat room one night, some genuine F1 will be yours. You can get it. I can't promise anything. But you're setting all that up. They're brilliant. They're wonderful. You guys keep them afloat. You're getting. We spoke to them this week and said, you know, how much are we giving you? And they said, oh, well, we're a lot more than 100% return on investment. So we're very happy. Let's just leave it at that. And I said, oh, great. Thanks for them. So they didn't give us a figure, but they're very, very happy. Could you win a lap round source the car, Jenks? You're going to have to fly over from Canada for that one, though, mate. But yeah, I mean, if you want it, I'll see what I can do. If you want anything from UK2, then use the click through on our website. Go to britishtechnetwork.com and then click on their logo. If you don't click on that logo, we don't get the full benefit. They don't see it as their sale. They see it as their sale, and someone's just hacked the code. You go to a lot of voucher sites now, and you type in a voucher code for someone, and they'll give you some bland code back. That doesn't mean you're a listener. They want the listeners to prove that they're listeners. So log into your account through our website. Go and use the offer code from the click-through from our website. If you don't use that, then they won't credit us with the people who sent you. So every time you want to go to UK2, go to our website first, then go on, please. Loads of codes. They all start with British Tech, and then all you got to do is put VPS, VPN, DNS, all of those kind of things in, and you'll get money off or percentages off of their services. Just give them a try, see what you can come up with, but use the click-through from our site, please. Thanks, UK2. We're lost. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Neighbour?
Clothhead HQ on Twitter at the moment.
Good man. And we will be here tomorrow evening?
Yeah, no, London Mac User Group meeting tomorrow on Monday the 14th of May. We've got a session on Apple TV tomorrow night, I think. I'm going to give one away. It's in the Wood Pub near Marylebone, 7 till about 9.
Right, yeah. Thank you. Sarah, where can get you?
You can get me on the Twitters at SarahJaneUK.
And at Elmwood tomorrow night?
Probably not, actually.
Well, I'll be there. Lightweight. Two glasses of wine the other night and you sold them.
You lost count, matey.
I had a thumping head the next day. Tone, where can we get you, mate?
At tone_720 on Twitter that's the main way.
That'll do.
The way that leads to all of this.
Mr. Christopher Woods, where are you, sir?
Hello, sir. You can find me whenever I should be doing work. I'll be on Twitter at Christopher W, and you can send your rants to there.
Excellent. We'll be back again in 2 weeks. It'll be Monaco. I may or may not have broadband, depending on whether Virgin Media want to be heroes or not. They had the opportunity. There's a super hub 3 miles from my door at the firm that the things for them, the upgrades for them, and I sent a tweet out to them saying, please, you know, you've got the chance here to be absolute heroes on Friday, and they didn't open it soon enough. Bad luck, chaps. Could have been heroes, you said you're zeros. But we're going to go to Monaco in a few weeks, and we're going to have all the fun and all the boats, and they're all racing around their own houses, so there should be a lot of local knowledge.
And it seems Williams are going to get borrowed equipment for that race.
That's fantastic.
Oh, I'm losing
isn't
everybody.
It?
No, is that me that's being lost or you guys that's being lost?
I think it's you.
I guess it's me.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Dan, do you want to just read that
out?
If it
is me, someone else wrap up the show. See you at Monaco. Thanks very much for listening.
You just goes off into a
another professional show has now come to an end. Yeah, you'll see all of us, and hopefully Ewan, because it sounds like he doesn't have broadband now. If he doesn't, then I can string a piece of string between his and my houses, and we can work something out. Sounds like it probably worked better than what he's currently got, but there we go. So yeah, until next time, thank you everyone, and join us again soon for another F1 show.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.